Saturday, November 16th, had the feel of an important day in the White House to me because it really marked the launching of anything I would do about this diary. But first, Leonard and I had breakfast about 8:30, and then I met with Dr. Melville Bell Grosvenor and his wife and Liz in the West Hall over a cup of coffee, and we talked about the Redwoods. Dr. Grosvenor has just returned from a trip out there, and we, of course, will be leaving on one next Friday the 22nd, and I like to get indoctrinated. He loved this subject, and I love listening, not the least of what I wanted to know as a female participant in a picture story was what to wear. I decided on my heavy walking shoes from the Grand Tetons, possibly some heavy underwear, and my beige pantsuit. He spread out maps of the whole region and explained the history, the difference between the coastal redwoods, the tall ones that grow to 365 feet in heights, and the more inland ones, which are really bigger, and an automobile can drive through, the giganteas, and they're older, perhaps 3,500 years old. And he left me a vast sheaf of articles from the National Geographic for my bedtime reading between now and then. And then, about 11, he said goodbye, and I went down to the second and very exciting meeting of the day in the Lincoln sitting room. The publishers from Doubleday were coming to look at my diary. Mr. Ken McCormick, Mr. Sam Vaughn, Mrs. Evelyn Metzger, and Miss Maggie Cousins. The fire was warming that very familiar room, and Arthur Krim was with them, and they were dividing up the black notebooks that Charlie McGuire had prepared, laboring far into the night. I think there were three of the notebooks with a couple or so days each from each of the 6 years of the span of time we've lived here. They talked, and Arthur Krim, and mostly I listened, with the expansive feeling that they really were impressed and beginning to be excited. After saying hello to everyone and having a cup of coffee, I was in and out of the room, feeling that they would be more free to express themselves and to read quietly. They seemed quite concerned about the time they were taking up. I wasn't at all. As it got past 12, I suggested that they stay for lunch with me and call Lyndon. Yes, he would be glad to join us. I brought in Sherry, and each of them talked about the excerpts they had read, and I felt that they were quite genuinely interested. A little past one, we went into the family dining room, and Lyndon came with us, and we had a long, leisurely lunch, during which Lyndon did most of the talking, reminiscing about his years in Washington, in public office, his decisions here. Quite openly, I thought. When we finished lunch, and by that time it was 3 o'clock, I said goodbye. It had all been so much. I was so excited. It was like a surfeit of candy and cake and pie. And so I wanted a simple draft of fresh air and sunshine. I got the car and went riding around to a lot of the places we have worked on, to Watts Branch Park, where I was shocked to see what either was an enormous amount of erosion on the creek bank, or simply slipping in of the banks, or maybe it was flood damage, or maybe it was some sort of construction. So disappointing for something we had worked on. And then past Syfax School, where some of our trees were dead and all of our plants were full of weeds, and felt further disappointed. And then I drove by Bowen School. The planting was just in and looked fresh and great, and the playground equipment looked so sturdy and functional and just ready for hundreds of children. And just as I came to a halt, there was a big black limousine in front of me. Who should it be? Who naturally but the people who were as interested in this or more than I was, the ones who had given it. Kay Graham and her mother, Mrs. Agnes Meyer. I got out of the car and started over, and Kay Graham got out at the same time, and we met in the middle of the sidewalk, all smiles, and so surprised to run on each other there. She said she was taking her mother out for a drive. She hardly ever got out anymore because of her arthritis, and I went over and leaned in the car and talked to Mrs. Meyer, who is mentally salty and vigorous, although almost chair-bound physically. It had the pleasant, exciting quality of complete spontaneity, and their gift to the city is a great plus for that area. In our half day of happenings on Monday, it will be one of the places we visit and hail as an addition to the city's playgrounds. Then I drove on by L'Enfant Plaza, a handsome, spacious place, the plaza framed by two long buildings by I.M. Pei, and at the foot of the horseshoe, the great curving bulk of HUD, which I think is by Marcel Breuer. All of it on a vast scale, well planted, though the trees will have to grow to it. Enormously contemporary, but quite at home in this federal city, and worthy of it. I walked all around over it, after a while being recognized, and smiling and speaking as I walked on. There were lots of photographers, amateur and professional, and frequently I walked in front of their lenses, and I wonder if they will be surprised when they get their pictures developed, or will they recognize me? It was a beautiful fall day, and a good antidote to my hours in the house. The day, a mixture of high elation, almost not to be touched or believed success within the offing, and then the come down of the lack of maintenance in the work we had done around the city. I was back in the White House by 4:30 to find, to my amazement, that the people from Doubleday had just left, a very lengthy luncheon visit. So I went to the bowling lanes and had three good fast games. I'd asked Lyndon earlier who he would like to have for dinner, and he said, why don't you just invite anybody you want? And so I did. Bess and Tyler, and Liz and Les, and the Charlie McGuires, and Joe and Trudy Califano, and Harry McPherson and Clay. I grow more and more aware, as the time grows shorter, of what an extraordinary and wonderful staff has accompanied us through these years. And Barefoot and Jan Sanders, and Ramsey and Georgia Clark, they began to assemble about 6:30. We had drinks and a fire in the yellow room. Lyndon was quite late coming over. Ramsey and I sat down on the yellow Louis Kahn sofa and talked about this city, its future. Walter Washington, he's very high on him. He thinks it would be very wise if Nixon would reappoint him mayor. The schools, he used a startling figure. The percentage of Negroes in the schools of Washington has now risen to such an incredibly high number, I'm afraid to quote it, but I think it's in the upper 80%. And he thinks the quality of the education is deteriorating. We talked of the riots of April, of whether they had in a way lanced the ball and enabled us to get through a relatively peaceful summer. Ramsey is an extraordinarily articulate, gentle, tough, and likable person. At times I am dismayed by him. A modicum of partisanship, of working for your side, is necessary in politics, I think. And sometimes he seems to have an ivory tower unawareness. But I always find myself respecting him, and after I have heard his side, I understand it much better. Finally, we gathered around the long table with Lyndon and had a pleasant, good dinner of people who were all familiar with each other. And then, close to 10, most of us went downstairs to see a movie which turned out to be awful. And after about an hour of it, I threw everybody a goodnight kiss and went upstairs and to bed by 11:30. It had been a sort of a watershed day, though heading in what direction, I don't really know. And there were some straws in the wind of better things happening, a feeling that the talks in Paris might soon be joined by the Saigon regime. Maybe we would get somewhere. And then Nixon's appointment of Murphy, whom we respect and remember as an excellent professional, bodes well for this interim period.